So the most basic thing that we're going to need are microscope and cameras. So we all learned from John and Watt's great talk what are the microscope's current and the future holds. So you will need, so in terms of the practical use of this, the biggest thing that has changed in our field is that you have more users and the microscopes are getting more expensive. So stable optics and the stable electron source becomes a must, because you can no longer have somebody sit there and tune it every hour or two so that everything will work out right. So this sort of things are first priority. And the second thing is, of course, we need to have a good cryo-grid protection. Now, on the microscope, as well as you know, if you have an autoloader, you know, to keep it stable there. For instance, that sometimes in our facility, you know, two users will share the autoloader cassette. That means that you probably won't use your grid until maybe 3 days later. So it has to be able to hold, keep those grid clean. You know, for that time, by the time you are using it, it's still fresh. So that's sort of a consideration. And the high tension, why is that? You know, you have heard the cons and pros of the different high tension. Both of them will do good things for you. And the last one that's not.
I have a question already.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I broke my world record that I set when John was speaking, but for the line that there's higher contrast at 200 kV is a burr that gets under my saddle. It just makes me react badly. Contrast is a property of the the image and or of the specimen, I should say. So the decrease in the contrast depends on how much scattering there is, and there is very little difference in scattering between 200 and 300, like 10% or so.
Mm-hmm.
What's important is not the contrast, but the signal-to-noise ratio in the image. And the small decrease in contrast in going to 300 from 200 is 100% compensated by the fact that you, in the signal-to-noise, by the fact you can use more exposure. So many people say, you know, you get much better contrast. It doesn't help them. What's important is the signal-to-noise ratio.
Yes. Thank you, Bob. And basically, that I'm not saying one is better than the other, but that's what you're going to see as an apparent effect, as a no. So basically, what I like to say is that when I'm talking about this, as long as you are reasonably in the range of higher end microscope, there you will be able to get a very good data, and it's depends on your budget and also the type of project that you depend on your project and what you will pick and your budget. So the one thing I do want to emphasize is stage reproducibility and efficiency. This is where the practical part of the microscopy come in. Now, when we start to use all this automation, this is one single factor that's probably is going to affect you most. Now, what's interesting about this is that I had people ask me, say they have a chance to go to the manufacturer site to look at their microscope. It asks, what should you look for? And my advice is always, make sure your stage is good. It's a very finicky device. It has to balance all the weight, force, everything. So if it is not adjusted right, it's really hard to adjust it in the field. So that's the first thing that should be checked. Your XY reproducibility, your tilting reproducibility, both of them are going to change, how good a time you are going to have with this microscope when you are back. They can do the optics really well. We rarely, with the different quills that we have, we rarely have any problem with the optics. But the performance of a stage from one quills to the other vary quite a lot. So that's the part that you should pay more attention to. In terms of a camera, more or less, that it depends on your personal taste. You want the best image, or you want to have more images by having it faster. Okay, so that's why I'm highlighting this. Okay.
Can I ask? Mm-hmm. Stage, once it's installed or calibrated at the factory, it will be maybe at its best condition, let's say, and with time, it seems that it gets sloppier and sloppier.
Yes.
Do you think, or have you asked or discussed with them if it's possible to retune it or retighten it in a sense, or it gets
Yes, better? they can retune and retighten it, but if there was some problem to start off, it usually don't get fix that easily, but for retightening it, they can do it fairly well. But again, the stage, with the way that we are using microscope, the stage mechanism got buried more and more. And today, for example, on a Creos column, to adjust that stage, you basically have to crack the column in order to access to the part they need to adjust, and don't necessarily be able to get everything when they do that either. So that's why I emphasize this. Okay, now there are things that you can add to your microscope and the camera. I mean, the common things people consider are a faceplate, energy filter, and image CS corrector. So the advantage of each of them in practice. Now, for faceplate, it really is being able to increase your face contrast object, which is what we have. The face object contrast at a low defocus, at a really low defocus, that allows you to use a lower defocus to start off. It's not that it's changing the whole. This is why when you use a faceplate, you often end up with the same resolution if you have an ideal situation. So the energy filter is meant to filter out the invested scattering. So if you have thinner sample, then the effect of that to your signal-to-noise ratio becomes smaller. And for image CS corrector, the original design is designed so that they can increase the information limit. So in other words, and also increase where your shutter focus limit your data to. So what it means is that if you don't do CTF correction, how far your first node will go out to. So when they do CS correction, that's meant to increase that. And then, so what that means to us, if we are doing defocus imaging, the effect of that isn't very strong, and as Bob often pointed out, it's actually against us. Okay, so what would you get? It depends on your user base. So CMC at NYSBC, we have three quills. The first one has the standard Titan column, and without the energy filter or image CS corrector. The second one has the energy filter added on to it. The third one also have a CS corrector added to it. So our experience from using this is what I'm going to tell you after this. In addition, on all of this, we have faceplate. And then, so that's a thing that we added to all of them. So The one without the energy filter.
Just the cameras?
The camera on all of this, all of them have Falcon 3 and K2. If there is an energy filter, then that's at the end of energy filter. Yeah. The K2 will be at the end of energy filter. So when we first was trying to decide on what to get, the original idea was that, well, for the one without energy filter, we will be doing single particle analysis. And in addition, we can still do a lot of non-cellular tomography. These instruments at 300 kV will allow you to be able to penetrate a lot of sample well enough to get a good result. The one when we added the energy filter that we envisioned that the user come in with more cellular type of tomography, and they will have the option of, you know, getting a little better data. And with the CS corrector, there are things that we think the things about how do you think the next equipment that, you know, can help us improve. So that was the first one came in mind. So a lot of the reason we're getting CS corrector is to do more exploratory of, you know, what's next, what we can do on top of what we regularly have. So with that, I want to clear out two common mistakes that I overhear people are talking about their facility in terms of the planning. The first ideal thinking is that I have enough money, I can buy anything, so I'm going to buy everything. And so that's one. And the other one, well, wait a minute, did I miss a slide or something? But anyway, everything that you ask, what I want to convince you is that everything you ask for, something will be taken out from you. So what we need to realize is that electromagnetic lenses are not aberration-free. Now, Wah pointed it out yesterday already, that's, you know, to make an aberration-free lens will be something in the future. But that's not true yet. If you the Collins cross the Titan Collins cross section is quite big, like this. The actual beam, you know, where in our diagram, which is called the Collins, and where the beam passes through, really is probably narrower than a pencil. So it's not a lot of things that they can control well enough to have a beam that is aberration is in low aberration. Energy filter is made of more lens than what's in the microscope itself. So, you know, so you can just imagine that, you know, in order to get all of that to work perfectly, the kind of a correction they have to make in there, and every time when they are doing so, they are, you know, certain things will become worse, other things will become better. To work perfectly at the end, they have a lot of things that need to be adjusted. And as end result, your field of view is greatly reduced. And also because of the lens, it's greatly reduced. The part that you can keep it from distortion, for example, spatial distortion free, is limited. So all of the things make it, you know, there are certain things being taken out from that. The third thing is that, you know, now when you look at CS corrector, that also has quite a number of lens added to it. So there will be same thing is applied to it. And as I said, the design part, when they made the CS corrector, the purpose was to make sure that it works really well in focus. It's not meant for, it's not designed for you to do a defocus experiment. It's not designed for you to do an image beam shift targeting. So by the default, when you buy this, they're not going to train this CS corrector, which the CS corrector is, there's a very nice program associated with it, and but not most people don't know how to use the calibration part of it. It's really only the specialists at FEI would know. And they have to do particular training on the CS corrector or calibration so that it will respond to your image beam shift request from the microscope with the adjustment of all the lens so that it will come out with same aberration free as what you would have when you have a beam that it's not beam shift. And if you don't ask for it, they won't. So far, I haven't heard it's been performed anywhere until we ask for it to get that fixed. So that's something that you should know, that it wasn't originally designed for our field. So we have to be aware of that. So with all this, as I said, everything that add more lens to it, and then they add something that makes it less stable. You're going to have to tune it more often. They are more sensitive to the temperature fluctuation in the room as well as in your water. So if water chiller is not working well, temperature is not working well, they will know. How about faceplate? Now, in terms of monopoly gain, I think faceplate is what is called the orange block of the property, where it doesn't cost as much as what's that broke wall, but no, it will give you the best investment in return. So basically, with Rado's help, that a lot of the problems that he mentioned as far as the implementation problem for faceplate can be handled from the software in one way or the other. The fact that the faceplate is not good on every position, so we can do a mapping, and inside that you can actually map out which one you want to skip. So then in the automated data collection, it would just not go there. So overall, it's a really good device for all the reasons that Rado and the other pointed out. Okay, now the other myth is that I don't have that much money. I'm going to buy the best instrument, but I run out of money to renovate, so I'm going to put it in a room that's not quite at the spec that the manufacturer gave. So the problem is that TEM is only as stable as its environment is in. So for instance, somebody asked me yesterday how often we do a top-down alignment on our scope. And the fact is that we very, very rare doing that. On the quills, it's almost never. It only happens when we know certain part of optics is being changed. For example, with this, if we change the tip, the main thing we're going to align is only the gun. The column stays the same. There's no point of trying to adjust it anymore. Before the X-FAC, you probably will adjust your effect to get your gun tilt and gun shift better. And now you don't even have to do that anymore. As long as when you see you monitor your intensity stays stable, then it means that you don't have to do anything about it. So the requirement from the manufacturers, they will have a lot of things that's in there. It's going to change the temperature or your water cooling capacity is something that you definitely want to spend the resources in doing. And of course, the electromagnetic field is another thing that's always need to be worried about. Now, from our experience, the top reason for us to not being able to collect data for extensive amount of time, talking about more than half a day to a day. The first reason would be HVAC failure. And this, I took it out from the brochure during the manufacturing exhibit. The 0.8 degrees Celsius peak to peak in 24 hours. The second number I got out from a manager here at SRC, that he said, you know, within an hour, it actually has a spec as well. So you can't let it fluctuate too much. The second reason that we have more problem with is water chiller if it's, you know, go down or, you know, temperatures, you know, Earth is outside. So sometimes the temperatures, you know, it's get to the point that it can't function and we will have problem. And the third is, then it's the actual microscopy component, and it turns out that usually it's the autoloader. So that's an important thing to know. When the environment doesn't work, the first thing that we learn is that the first thing you will notice, the temperature in a room is inadequate, is your energy filter state will not align anymore. Because there are a lot of lens in the energy filter, so the beam paths can change very easily in there. The second thing that we will start noticing is the CS corrector alignment becomes difficult. We align CS corrector only once a day. So on the next day, if we start to see that the alignment doesn't come back, you know, it's show that it's misaligned in the first time so much that it could not recover after we redo the alignment in one shot. That means something probably during that time or currently your temperature is off. And it's again, not until these two are telling you that something's wrong, you're not going to see your beam start moving away. So again, I'm reiterating that, you know, as you add on more things, your environment needs to be better to match. Otherwise, that you are not going to gain from it.
Andrea, I have a question about your most elementary Krios, that with no energy filter and no corrector.
Yeah.
Have you measured how stable the axial coma-free alignment is? So that's the simplest one to do, very quick to do. But there seems to be some experiences now that it may last for only a couple of hours, and you should do that correction more frequently.
It's I have experienced in one case that. I don't think we actually need to adjust that much, even every day. Ed or Bill may be able to comment more on the Krios one.
Very stable.
Yeah, we don't see enough deviation from day to day that we need to realign most of the time. We just do a sampling tableau and then look. So our accuracy is probably like 0.1 to 0.2 milliradian. Well, it should be even less than 0.0, probably in the 0.0, let me see. We would do 5 milliradians tableau. So we should be about 0.1.
Yeah, I'll just, for the people's interest, mm-hmm. I have two data points. Wim Hagen wrote to me that in their installation, it could change quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day I had a Krios session at Berkeley at 24 hours. We corrected before we collected, and then at the end, we looked at it again. It was quite far off.
Yeah, in our case, we haven't had that problem. I know that in some cases, it's stable for weeks. So the other thing is that for the you do want to monitor your intensity, and the intensity in a way is going to reflect your environment as well, because, you know, if the environment changes, you're going to have problems in there. So this is a typical plot that we have over 24 hours. You know, if you can stay to stay stable in a 3% range, then you are doing very well. And if it's beyond 10%, you have a problem, you know, either in your gun or in your environment. So you should look for and see if anything else starts changing.
You're running out of time, Angie.
Okay. Wow. I thought it's going to be much faster. Okay. But, okay, so I'm going to go through this because this one is the most important part that we can skip the rest of it. The validation of the instrument. On when you get to the microscope, they do I forgot what it stands for, but it's a standard test for installation. And then they will give you numbers about what's going on. One is the inflammation limit, and the other one is how far the toluene fit will go out to. When you have a user, then it's very likely that it will be a good idea for you to show them that you can achieve the same kind of situation for your toluene that can reach out to what they are trying to get to. And the other thing is that to make sure that there's no other factor that's affecting its isotropic information transfer. The other thing that we always do is have a workflow performance test that, you know, people should have some kind of a test specimen to make sure your workflow works to get to the reconstruction. And that will also build up the confidence of your users that, you know, you have a good microscope, you have a good setup, and it's not, if something goes wrong, it's their sample, it's not you. Mm-hmm. So, and we have a standard format, and Ed will make this up in very quickly. So the last thing that I want to say is that with this combination of microscope and the camera, we're getting sub-angstrom in, you know, on all of the combination. It's never, you know, some of them will be better or worse. The really factor is the specimen prep, whether that grid is good on that day or not. That's the so it's not really the instrument that the one is better than the other. All right. So then what I can do is just jump to the conclusion, because the rest of them really is just to illustrate what you would do. Let's see, how do I do this? Get out. Why won't it get out?
We'll put the slides online so people can see it.
Yeah. So what I want to say is really is already here. Basically, that environment is most important. If anything you learn from what I said here is that, you know, that is going to determine what your scope performance. Practically, the more things that you add down there, then you have a weak point in terms of where it can have problems in your day-to-day life. The operational-wise, all of them can be done pretty well in terms of your setup, so that's not an issue as far as once it's stabilized. You will be able to do them easily in all of them. Make sure that you perform a workflow validation. And the last part is the part I didn't get to cover, is that I have been telling people that you can use a sound image shift for data collection. I want to say is that all automated data collection software use some image shift. So don't be fooled that it's not doing anything. If you are getting 1,000 images a day, that means that you are doing an image shift somewhere. So thanks to all the people that help with all this. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Angie. I don't know. I think as Mark sets up, we're sort of running behind, but we can take, I don't know, one question, quick question.
Hi, Angie. So I have a question about CS Cracker. So we use image shift with a CS tractor. So the in terms of the CTF, how do you crack the difference in defocus U and defocus V? I mean, you really introduce more difference, right?
Okay.
With image shift.
So the way that the CS corrector works, at the end, when you do image shift, we train to the CS corrector so that the only operation that it's going to introduce is astigmation. Okay, not on your B2 term, which corresponds to the coma. So you just adjust it as if it's. No, astigmatism.